Hey guys, welcome back to CGM Lounge. It's been a while. But we wanted to come back live and stronger than ever. So have a great new co-host with me today, Mike Pay. So Mike, hey, introduce yourself to the CGM audience and let them know, you know, what you've been up to in your career and where we're going with CGM.
Hey, I appreciate the intro, Dom. Yeah, so my name is Mike Pay. And I have 15 plus years of experience in investment banks and finance. And I think, you know, we're gonna have a great collaboration and teamwork in terms of my background and the services that CGM provides. And I definitely, I know, read about your story, and it kind of is similar to my story as well. Where, you know, growing up, you know, we didn't have all the resources and the connections that I have currently. And that's through obviously hard work and dedication to your craft. And I think, you know, starting out your own business is always difficult, and getting that connection, you know, takes time. And what you guys have, obviously, CGM is helping individuals or companies with the blueprint of how to start a company, the rules and regulations of forms that you need to fill out, the do's and don'ts, and I think that's key. I also run a company that is in the professional development space. So I help individuals and groups of people with resume writing help, cover letters, mock interview. And I understand that, you know, if you're passionate about something that you're that's near and dear to your heart, it's something that could be very productive for yourself and everyone else involved. So, you know, my services is something that I'm proud of and that I've acquired over 15 plus years of working in Wall Street. And I kind of packaged it into different types of services that's relevant to the individuals. So if somebody's resume is top tier, but they are nervous about interviewing, we provide help on mock interviews. So it varies from training on Bloomberg to Excel training to prep them and have them be ready to go on an interview, as opposed to just having a recruiter or themselves book an interview date and practice on their own. We kind of are the professionals that step in and say, hey, for this particular role, these are the skill sets you would need, and these are the types of training you will need to excel in order to do the job successfully. So when they get on an interview, they are not kind of in the dark. They kind of know these are the skill sets, these are the types of training, what the day-to-day activities look like, and that kind of gives them the upper hand versus other individuals. And we're talking about individuals coming from either state schools or Ivy Leagues. So it kind of puts them at an advantage versus other individuals. And the reason Dom invited me on this podcast is because we're also working closely together, and we met through mutual friends, and we wanted to share the story of, you know, how we both came from kind of like the bottom and just looked at, you know, the surroundings and see, you know, what could we make of it. And, you know, starting out our own businesses, we kind of, you know, had the trials and tribulations like any company would. And we wanted to share that with the audience here and provide some feedback on, you know, the do's and don'ts and what kind of pitfalls you might see along the way, and basically see how, you know, two different areas can come together and actually build something new in terms of services and products.
Yeah, man, it's exciting because business for me is always, I've always seen it as like a mirror, like a reflection, right? So whatever you are is gonna highlight those things, your insecurities, your strengths, your weaknesses, your ambitions, your goals, all those things are going to be magnified through business, through entrepreneurship. And if we do it right, we can learn more about ourselves in this arena than we would if we were kind of you know, regular civilians, like working a 9-to-5. And so some things that we've talked about over the phone, and you sent some emails to me, are like, how can we communicate to people through this medium the road through business, the highs, the lows, the reality, you know, I think, you know, the facts, not the fluff, right? And how can we get somebody to look at themselves in their own entrepreneurial mirror and want to take that ride? So one of the things you sent me, one of the topics is like, find the right opportunity. Where businesses should, what business should somebody start? And so how did you, I guess, take this path, or what made you walk your path, and how can we communicate that, in your opinion, to like listeners on like, what's the spark for them to know that they're on the right path for starting the business that's best for them?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And I think what I noticed is any type of invention or a new idea typically is sparked by some kind of a challenge to the individual themselves. And what I mean by that is, when I first interviewed at Goldman Sachs out of college, I was interviewing for a very junior role, and I didn't have any mentors at that time, and my family didn't have anyone in corporate America or on Wall Street. So I had to do the research on my own, trying to figure out who's on the board, what types of revenue they were making, just the different types of analytics. So I thought to myself, 15 plus years later, had there been a company out there similar to a Kaplan or a Princeton Review training course where, you know, they prep you for exams, LSATs, PSATs, SATs, had there been a company out there that prepped individuals or young graduates for Wall Street, it would have been a course I would have definitely took, because it would put me in a different position and give me the edge over obviously other individuals interviewing for the same roles. So I had to do it on my own. And then through the course of working at these banks, I've gained the knowledge through interviews and being on interviews myself. So being on both sides, I see the pitfalls, the do's and don'ts that I thought was very necessary, and would have definitely made it easier had that company or resources been out there when I first interviewed at Goldman Sachs. And the very junior role that I had was actually 9 interviews for a position in hedge funds in Princeton, New Jersey. So you can see how if there was a course out there, it would have definitely trimmed the time in half or more.
Right.
I would have had the opportunities to you know, learn more from the individuals at those companies or that were giving those courses. So I decided to create it myself. Similar to, I'll give an example of, similar to something that you have a challenge at the house, right? If it's cleaning something, whether it's a window and you can't reach it, that sparks interest in, well, let me try to invent something that can have a handle and is adaptable and can reach a higher surface. So the point is, the spark that I noticed was usually something that's a challenge for the individual themselves. And then they think about, hey, how can I improve this situation? Whether it's creating a product myself or connecting with other resources to see if we can meet this challenge. So that's how I came up with Pay Inc., which is a professional professional educators of interviews, Pay Inc. And it helps individuals with, again, resume writing, cover letters, mock interviews, and then obviously training for whatever type role you're trying to seek on Wall Street. And that's how it kind of blossomed into an actual company. So initial point is, the spark comes from a challenge. Then it's about identifying the challenges and then seeing what kind of resolutions or solutions you can figure out. And then that can turn into a company, or it can just turn into an idea. And if it's just an idea, obviously it sits there, but if you can actually implement some action into it, it could develop into a company such as Pay Inc. and CGM.
Yeah, and we hear a lot of times people, so like, do what you love, find what your passion is. How, where are you on the side of the fence of doing what you love versus doing things that, or starting a business that consumers need a resolution with? Like, where are you with that?
Absolutely. I think it's a combination, right? Just doing what you love and having something that is not beneficial to the public, I think you're not going to get too far in terms of making revenue. If you just like vacation, right, you're not really going to garner any revenue. But if you like vacationing and also think about, hey, I like to plan my vacations and plan the whole itinerary with activities, well, you can do that for yourself and you can start doing that for other people. So basically, it's trying to understand what you like, but also try to understand, hey, how can I turn this into a service for other people? Mm-hmm. So you're able to flip the switch and say, hey, the thing that I'm providing for myself or my family and my friends, I can turn this into a service for other people that are willing to pay, but I'm also obviously doing it on their behalf. So it's a service for them. So I think if you think like that, it kind of helps you understand the business model behind it. So if you're initially thinking about, hey, I like to go on vacations, how can I turn that into a revenue source? Well, if you use it as a service, then you can provide a service for other people, and that could be an avenue to generate income.
Do you feel, or do you, in your expertise and your experience, starting a business in that kind of gut-wrenching moment of like, how much should I charge for this good or this service? Do you feel like people, entrepreneurs, really understand how to price out their services or their goods, and like initially, and they can grow into it? Or like, do you think that's a big?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's tricky depending on the service you're providing, but it's mm-hmm. also tricky if you're new at what you do, mm-hmm. right? So if you're just a first time business owner and entrepreneur, you know, starting out, you're gonna make mistakes. Right, it's inevitable that you're gonna make mistakes, right? So I think what you need to do is do some research. See, that's the thing, you do have to do research on your own. You have to know your competitors. Are there mm-hmm. other companies out there that's doing the same thing? And if they are, what's the price point that they're charging, right? If you look at that, it kind of gives you the benchmark of how to price your product and services as well. So basically, you need to look at the market and the industry out there that's in your space. That way you have a guide in creating the pricing model. Otherwise you're just guessing. And I think that would help you. So once you're able to understand your competitors and their products and services and the prices that they charge, you can obviously start lower because you're new and try to get in market entry that way. But also obviously going on their websites and learning about, you know, what services they provide and seeing if you could provide similar services and seeing if you can do it better. And I think that's one key element of, instead of just guessing because you're new, you can look at their markets, the industry that you're in, and try to get an idea of, you know, what they're charging using benchmarks. Similar to when we look at the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones as mm-hmm, a benchmark. Mm-hmm. Stock market, they need to benchmark for themselves, right? Because if you're, let's say you're making $1,000 off of a particular stock, $1,000, wow, that's good, right? But you also can see that if you compare that to the S&P 500 or Dow Jones, and let's say they're making $10,000, now your $1,000 is only 10%. So you're not actually, you know, that good. So the point is, not just looking at the dollar amount, looking at the percentage month over month, year over year, to get a reference, I think it's key. So it all goes back to having a reference point or a benchmark.
Excellent. And just for the listeners that aren't familiar, can you explain S&P 500 and Dow Jones for them just really quickly, just because in case they heard it and they're like, what is that? Can you just kind of explain that to them?
So S&P 500 is actually a group of 500 top stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. And the reason it's a good benchmark is it has 500 of the top performing stocks on the market. So basically, if you have a sample size of 100 people and 20% of the individuals get 100%, that would be only a portion of it. But if you're able to get 50% of the 100 people that are getting A's, you know, B's and C's, that gives you a bigger sample size that's more realistic. So the S&P 500 is kind of like the more realistic group of stocks that are have their performance that you're able to be related to. Dow Jones is usually for blue chip stocks, which are, you know, the Facebooks, the Googles, you know, but those individual stocks are quite pricey, right? Not at the average individual can buy, you know, 10 shares or 100 shares of those, right? So that's why, you know, the different portfolio managers have other setups for, you know, other stocks that they do research in. So it's not just let's buy the most expensive stock. Over time, they will do well, but the problem is you don't have the resources to buy it at high volume to generate that income that, you know, millionaires and billionaires can do. So it goes back to looking at the benchmark. And I'll give you the quick example of the benchmark in the NBA, the Basketball Association, right? So let's say you're an up-and-coming basketball player, and in your high school or middle school or even college, you're scoring 10 points a game, 15 points a game, right? You're saying, well, that's pretty good, right? 10 points, 15 points, that's pretty good. But if you compare yourself to, you know, Michael Jordan or LeBron James, you know, they're averaging 40, 50, even more per game. So right there, you can tell, wow, 10 points isn't that good compared to them. That's because they're at a higher level and we're using them as a benchmark. So it kind of puts you in perspective of how good you are once you compare it to somebody else. Because if you don't have that benchmark alone, it's kind of a silly comparison to think you're at a different level where you're not.
No, that was excellent. That was excellent. And just to jump back into, like, what type of business should I start if I'm an entrepreneur? You sent a couple of links over, and they're really interesting to me. So the first one was from NerdWallet. So if you guys don't have access to, like, good resources, there are some free places that are really, really great. One I love is NerdWallet. NerdWallet is awesome. And also there's, like, Motley Fool. It's another great kind of business website that has great resources. But you sent a link from NerdWallet, the 50 best small business ideas. Very interesting list. I'm going to run the top 10 off to you and tell me your thoughts about why they listed these as the top 10. So I'm going to run them off. Ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, number one, accounting and bookkeeping. Number two, business consulting. Number three, marketing services. Number four, real estate business. Number five, event planning. Number six, video production. Number seven, ironically, podcasting. Number eight, IT consulting. Number nine, catering. And number 10, social media management. Very interesting list for the top 10. What are you gleaning from that top 10? I'm not sure if they put it in any particular order, but I'm assuming they did since they numbered them. What's your take?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I analyze when I see that is it's relevancy, right? You have to understand why are these things relevant, right? So like you mentioned, the first one, accounting and bookkeeping, that's necessary, right? Whatever type of business you're in, you need an accountant and you need bookkeeping, you know, booking the journal entries, you know, debits and credits. That's just to get you organized in any business, right? Because no one can remember all the numbers, right? So you have to have some source of record and record keeping. So that's important. Business consulting. So that's the number two. Well, what does that mean? Well, it's about running your business the right way, you know, looking at the size of your income and the size of your business and seeing what you want to generate and speaking to consultants, which are experts in various topics is key because going back to my other point about just guessing so far, right? And maybe you'll be lucky, right? But the point is it's not a sustainable way to do business, right? By guessing. So you need the proper guidance and business consulting is key. And obviously that's one of the services that CGM provides. So a quick plug on that.
Yeah.
And number three, marketing services. So how can we get the products and services out there, right? How do you get your name out there, right? If you don't have the resources to run a commercial, you know, there's different ways to run the commercial other than on TV, right? Social media platforms, word of mouth, you know, old school, right? A friend bought your service or your product and they love it. Now they tell their significant other, they tell your brother or sister or their uncles, and now they're interested about it because it's through somebody they know. So that type of marketing still works because it's coming from a place of comfort, right? Somebody that they know, they trust, is saying, hey, this product and this service is amazing. Hey, let me give it a shot, right? As opposed to seeing a commercial on TV where there's no influence by somebody that they know. So marketing services are key. And then number four, as you mentioned, was real estate business. So, you know, throughout time, this has been something that's, you know, lucrative, and it's a hard asset. And what that means is it's something that's tangible, right? At the end of the day, you hear about cryptocurrencies and the mess that they have in terms of, you know, you forgot your password, now you can't access it. You know, those types of things are intangible. You can't touch it. You can't actually go find it. At least, you know, when you deal with real estate, it's something tangible. You can go to the building, right? You know, if you needed extra funds and you're in dire straits, you can actually at least sell that building and make some, you know, funding come out of that. Whereas, you know, in the space of cryptocurrency, not saying it's bad or good, just saying that it's not a tangible asset. You can't touch it. That's why some people are a little skeptical about, you know, those types of assets. But again, going back to real estate, it has been doing well since the, you know, beginning of time. And it's something that takes time, obviously, right? Some people are looking for the quick flip. Some people like rental income, steady income that comes in month after month. And then some people like to fix it up, wait a year or two, and then sell it for a bigger profit margin. Big advocate on real estate. And the next one that I mentioned was event planning. So what does that mean? That means it's a type of service, right? You're providing a service of kind of getting an idea together and also showcasing it, right? How do you best showcase an idea? You know, do we rent out a hotel room? Do we rent out a large office space? Do we rent out our arena? All that factor comes into how big your party will be or how big the audience you guys are trying to target. So all that goes in there. And it's again, another way of marketing, right? Getting your name out there, getting your company's name out there. So that's key. And number six is video production, right? So this is obviously a lot more common nowadays than 10, 15 years ago, where everyone has a camera now, or most people have a camera that is on their phone or has capabilities on their phone to do videos. So that's important. And it's about kind of advertising again, right? You have a little clip of an event that you had over the weekend and you share it on social media. That's another way to advertise. But again, it's not all advertising are good, right? So it has to be strategic. You have to edit it and make it meaningful, right? You don't just start videoing everything over the weekend and then just put that up there, right? So a lot of thought goes into the things that we do at CGM and Pay Inc. So just a little pointer that, you know, not all videos and pictures are relevant. You have to provide edits. You have to spend the time to make it meaningful. So that's key. And then number seven, podcasting, right? Something that we're doing today where, you know, there's a platform and a medium for exchange of ideas, feedback, and talking about a specific topic that people might be interested in, but, you know, might not have the platform to ask questions on their own. You know, something like this is a good resource for them to listen in on a topic, spark an idea. Maybe they'll create a company on their own. Maybe they'll reach out for resources that we have. But again, it's just having that spark and that interest and having a platform that you can share ideas and actually come for guidance is key. Number eight is IT consulting, right? So in any type of business, you're going to have a computer and technology aspect of it, right? So whether it be the phone or the actual computer printers, that's key. And having a good IT team or IT resource on hand is important, just for day-to-day activities, whether you're managing, updating, or troubleshooting, those types of activities are done by the IT team. So they're very important part of day-to-day processes and work at any firm. And number nine, right? They're right. So basically, if you're a business in terms of making some type of food product, right? That's key, and that's one of the businesses that are thriving, especially out of COVID, because you couldn't go into the restaurants and eat. So a lot of people came up with ideas of, hey, I'm really good baker. I can make really good cookies or muffins, and how can I turn this into a business? So they started making it out of their house, and these are types of businesses that are something that is niche, because whether they're a good cook or they're a good baker, they now turned it into a business idea and a business itself. So that kind of blossomed out of COVID as well. And I've seen a lot of startups, whether it's pastries or there was I think a sister team from East Coast. I think they ran a seafood company, and it was something that it just came to them because they needed to make money during COVID. A lot of the companies were shut down, so they started thinking, hey, what are we good at? Well, we like seafood, and we know different areas to get them, so why not start our own seafood company and provide it to the community? So that idea blossomed out of necessity, so that's key. And the last one I want to touch upon, social media management, right? So that's key. So we're talking about the Twitter, the Instagram, TikTok, all those types of marketing services and platforms. But again, we talk about management, meaning how do you best utilize those platforms, I think is key. Trying to understand and give yourself that training instead of just saying, well, someone else is on TikTok, let me join. Well, it has to be strategic if you're trying to run a business, right? What's the point of you having a TikTok account versus an Instagram versus a Twitter? You have to know your audience. You have to see, what they're into, and then understand their need, and then use the platform that most is used by them. And I think, as long as you have a plan, you're strategic, it makes good use of social media. Then you have the management part of it.
Excellent. And then so you guys, one thing that's to note, these top 10 are all pretty much service-based. So what happens in a service-based business, usually the overhead startup costs are a little bit cheaper than a business that's requiring you to get raw material and turn it into like a product. So even if we look at the list, even extended business planning, tax consulting, PR, professional organizing, photography. Arguably, the entrepreneur doesn't need any equipment until they get down to photography, where you would need the camera. And so, what NerdWallet is communicating to you guys is like what Mike said: understanding and doing research. The number one barrier to entry for any business is, do you have the required resources to open the door for the customers, right? So if you're
Absolutely.
trying to sell cookies and you don't have an oven big enough to bake cookies, you're gonna have to go to a place to get that. Like, even though you're great at baking, if you can't do the production, you can't get the store open. But as we can see, NerdWallet has said, hey, some of the best businesses to start are gonna be businesses that are service-based. So startup capital and startup equipment gonna be very, very inexpensive as compared to something else. Now, another link you sent was the 23 most profitable business ideas. So I'm very interested to see, do they link up with the 50 best businesses to start? So I'm just gonna read the first five or six, just to get your thoughts on them. All right. So first, Food truck. That's interesting. Food truck. Second, car wash. Another interesting one. Third, auto repair. Fourth, personal trainers. Fifth, newborn and post-pregnancy services. So that seems a little bit different than the top 50 or the top 10 and the 50 we just read. What do you think about these businesses as the most profitable?
Yeah, so again, echoing your point, these are service-based, right? So I think out of research and out of COVID, these things kind of stood out. And I think that's why, these things were on the list as being most profitable. So food trucks, obviously during COVID, you're seeing less of them, but there's new ideas that came about. So, the regular halal trucks, obviously people, may or may not know about them, but there's new trucks that came out, right? They serve Thai food or a Korean barbecue truck that came out, or a truck that came out and sold jerk chicken, right? New ideas came out because anytime there is a setback, whether it's in the economy or in your family, I think we self-reflect, right? We take a step back and try to think, what am I good at? What kind of skills do I have? And I think people relate to things that they know, right? It's something that, whoa, I've heard of food trucks. Maybe I could start something that I'm an expert in cooking at the house, and we turn that into a business. So that idea kind of grew out of that. And I think that's one of the reasons food trucks came about, because it's something that it's you don't need professional training or a license in terms of year after year. You need the license to run the truck, but not actual license for an exam. So that's market entry is a little easier. And then car wash services, right? Something as simple as a car wash. Well, it's something basic, but it's something that's a necessity, right? Throughout COVID, there was shelter in place, but we still needed to get around places, right? So if you're driving your vehicles around, it's going to get dirty. So, that aspect of car wash services is a necessity. So that came out, and it's a good business model, and the revenues are pretty high. So that's one of the reasons it's on the list. And then relatable item is auto repair, right? So if you're driving your vehicles around day to day, essentially you're gonna have the wear and tear, right? You're gonna need the oil changes. And again, during COVID, these were actually types of places that had to remain open because it was a necessity. So you can see that even during COVID times, it had to be open because it was just part of day-to-day routines that you needed to have repairs and maintenance done on your vehicles. So this is another area why it's seen as very profitable. And another area is number four, personal trainers. Right. So you might think to yourself, well, a lot of gyms closed during COVID. Why would this be a good idea? Well, initially, it was something that impacted the gyms and personal trainers. But eventually, people are unique and people are innovative. They started having training classes outside, right? Outside the gym, right? Same facility. And they just, had other ideas, maybe use a jump rope instead of staying indoors with the machines. But the point of this is we all know about, when you're at the house and you're less active, and how that's obviously going to impact some person's physical exertion, right? So, if you're at the house and you're doing your day-to-day routines in a chair and you're not moving as much, not walking to work or walking to the office from your car or walking to the office from a bus stop or a train station, you're less active, right? And it's just obvious that, the pounds might add up. That's key, right? So, it's key. And it's something as silly as that, it is a market for these individuals that are very fit. They're into nutrition, they're into diets, when you're on the computer, you're not thinking about that stuff, right? If you're a computer programmer or you're working in investment banking, you're not thinking about that. So having another expert, help you understand your diet, help you understand a regimen that you should get into in terms of getting some physical activity in is key. So that's why personal trainers are kind of important in our day-to-day lives. And number five, I want to just touch upon is newborn and post-pregnancy services, right? So this is talking about how, you know, although millennials are deferring parenthood, meaning they're taking longer to have kids than, you know, baby boomers period, where, you know, they had kids right out of college. People are focused more on their professions and then, you know, building that stable income before they decide to have a child or have children is something that we see in the trend. So basically, we wanted to address post-pregnancy services. So, you know, whether that be, you know, the caretakers and the daycares, you know, that's still a business that is in as a necessity. So this is a new area. So, you know, whether you're providing kids with daycare and education programs in there, that's necessary. So again, even though we're in different times, this particular service is still a big component of day-to-day lives.
Yeah, and it's, like you said, very, very interesting. This list seems to me to revolve around lifestyle, right? So you have like lifestyle kind of choices for people, like food truck has become very popular. So, hey, I don't have to go to a restaurant to go get tacos or to go get halal, you know, right. I can go very convenient. I mean, we talked about it the other day. The whole concept of a drive-through is I don't even want to get out of my car to get the food. Well, damn, right. The food truck, I don't even have to go anywhere. Like the food truck is parked at the top of my block, or maybe, you know, in my neighborhood, I could just walk to it. I don't have to wait in line. I don't have to go to a location. I can wear my pajamas, pull up to the food truck, or it's near where I work. I could just go downstairs. Guilty as charged. I just had a halal 2 minutes ago. I went downstairs. I knew we had this podcast. I grabbed a quick, it used to be $5. Now it's $8, but I grabbed a quick $8 meal from the food truck. Car wash, tried and true. You have a hose. You have water. You got some soap. You can wash your car, but it's really not quite the same unless you go through that car wash and you get that nice smell, you get that nice Armor All on the leather. So the auto repair, again, like lifestyle things that people just have to do daily, eat, take care of their car, take care of their bodies, take care of their newborn. These are all necessity-based things, it seems like. And like we talked about before, passion and love and pride are one thing, but do people need it? Do people need it is important. So a couple more things I just wanted to, because you just sent over like a great list, just want to kind of nail down some things for the listeners. Home-based business ideas. We get this question a lot, and I want to, before we jump into the article, I want to ask you a question. So we get a lot of calls from clients, and if you're listening to us, obviously you're a fan, and I hate the word fan. You engage with Common Ground Management, and you've known us. So we get a lot of calls every day over the last decade. And one of the questions, even today I had a client, he's like, do I need a virtual office address? Do I need a third party address? And I'm like, no, just use your house. Use the address that you're associated with, because it's gonna make your life a little bit easier as you're going to get, open up bank accounts, go to get different things. And so here's a list about home-based businesses. The question for you, Mike, and obviously you deal with much, much larger businesses, have you ever experienced any difficulty in getting things done because you had your home address associated with the business?
Me personally, no. And going back to your point, it's the most relevant and the most obvious, because if you use your home address, I don't want to say 100%, but most of the time, it's associated with your Social Security and your accounts, right? It's that exact one. I don't know too many people that have multiple ones associated with just their residence.
Right.
It's linked to their Social Security. And I think, like you said, make your life simple, right? If your place of residence, most people start their businesses out of a garage. That's your residence.
Right.
Started out of a home office. So, you know, for the listeners out there, make it easy for yourself, right? There's no need to buy a PO box address or do anything roundabout way, right? Let's just focus on keeping it simple, right? That little concept makes sense, right? Keeping it simple. So use your home address, right? And if you start to grow, you need a factory, whether you're selling, big goods, then obviously it transitioned to a commercial business address. And that's where, you focus on that. But again, if you're just starting out a little business out of your house, yeah, I would suggest using your home address and your home residence as the start.
Yeah, and there's a list. We'll just go through the top three home-based businesses: freelance writer, virtual assistant, research and fact checker. Funny thing, I get a lot of people asking me about remote work now. I don't know like why it became a crazy big thing in 2022, 2023, but a lot of people are asking me, do I know how they can get a remote job, remote work? Number two thing on the home-based business list, virtual assistant. What are your thoughts about these three: freelance writer, virtual assistant, research, and fact checker?
Yeah, I think just to touch upon them collectively is I personally thought remote working was going to inevitably be around in the coming years, if not 5 to 10 years. COVID, the pandemic actually was a catalyst that pushed that on a larger and a faster scale. So what I mean by that is remote work was something that you can do at the house, whether you're analyzing some data, running graphs, you could do that at the house. Whereas years ago, before COVID, everyone was doing it in the office. And I'll tell you the pros and cons of it. So during COVID, everything was shut down and everyone had to work from home because, we couldn't be around each other.
Mm-hmm.
Virus, right? So the company saw that, wow, these people in the office roles are, getting their reports out, they're still doing their day-to-day activities, so everything seems fine. But the issue with that is you don't get the spontaneous collaboration that you would normally have. So if you're not in the office, you're not sharing ideas, and you're not learning the way you would in an office setting. So learning from, just remotely, you will have to set up Zoom meetings or video conferencing constantly. And that is not as natural as if you're in the office, walking by somebody's desk and saying, hey, how did you do that calculation? Or, hey, how did you, work on that project today? How did that presentation go? It's a little bit more natural if you're in the office sharing ideas versus setting up 15 different Zoom calls to ask, everyone on your team what they did differently. So
yeah, it's that invisible energy transfer. Like if I walk by you, there's things that we feel that are more, plasmic than like if I'm over, like right now we're over kind of like a wire. Like even though you're talking, your presence is in there, and it's like you said, it's much more difficult to get that energy spark over phone or Zoom, seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that collaboration aspect, that intangibleness that you will get if you're in the office sharing an idea with somebody, that's key. So, that's why remote work has its, pros and cons. And that's why most of the banks are having people do the hybrid model or even come back fully, Monday through Friday in the office, because they feel, that promotes a better learning environment.
Awesome. And then we're winding down, guys. We like to keep these nice and short so you guys can digest them playing back. Last list, 44 online business ideas you can start now. Very interesting. Let's look at the top three. And so really funny, social media has been on almost all of these lists. So number one, e-commerce store. Number two, social media marketing. Number three, freelance graphic design. What do we feel about these, Mike? How do we feel?
Yeah, again, they're service-based, and I think it has the marketing aspect, right? Advertising aspect of it, and it's key, right? And when we talk about marketing, we talk about strategic marketing, right? Is there a way we can market it? And you have to be strategic, right? Just even with this podcast, right? The logo that you guys used, you know, the visuals, you know, that's key, right? And it pops, right? It's very strategic in how you develop it. And I think that's goes hand in hand with other businesses as well, right? How you select your logo, you know, the color that you use, you know, the colors, the fonts, you know, all that comes into play, and it has to be strategic and it has to stick out. And it has to be memorable, right? If somebody's able to remember your logo and your image, you know, that kind of sticks in their mind and it helps with the marketing aspect.
Yeah, and guys, the key to business, especially if you're starting out and you've never done it before, is really understanding the cost of the currencies. And so you have three currencies. You have time, money, and effort. Time, money, and effort. Those are your currencies that we have that can get us resources, that can get us active. You know, inertia is very important in business. Entrepreneurship is a contact sport. So you got to be doing things. You got to be hands-on. But understanding, like, how much is this going to cost me to get off the ground in my time, in effort, and in money? And when you look at these lists have pretty much given you businesses that can be started relatively easily with not a lot of money. There's always going to be an effort component in there. Like, always going to have to try and do things and put forth your best, you know, energy towards getting something off the ground. But obviously, the more you do something, the better you can get at it, the better you should get at it, the easier it is to get off the ground. But that time component is so key. Mike, can you talk to us about how long should somebody expect to do something before they see some type of return? Like, how much time should I be investing in these ideas that I have before I know whether I should pivot, keep going, completely scrap the whole idea, start anew? Like, what's my time measurement, or what's our time measurement, you think?
For me personally, it actually took years because, again, it was an idea that I just thought of. But again, I had a full-time job at the bank, so obviously that took up a lot of time. And so it's basically, it was an idea that, you know, was in my mind for many, many years. For it to come into fruition was something that took many years to cultivate, right? So it was an idea. I had to figure out, you know, what my target audience was, what the demographics would be relatable to professional development, right? And the target audience that I mostly deal with is graduating seniors. And, you know, so graduating seniors, young professionals, and also have professionals in their, you know, 30s, 40s, and 50s. People that, you know, were in the industry for many years, they got laid off, they weren't interviewing for many years. They wanted to know, you know, what the market was like in terms of the questions I was being asked, the salary level. So it's a huge range, but the bulk of my target audience is graduating seniors, right? They, you know, graduated 4-year college or university. They're trying to get their first corporate role. And usually it's volume based, right? They'll apply to 100 jobs or 50 jobs and saying, hey, at least I'll get one job or one interview opportunity out of that. So what my firm does is we think more strategically. You know, we look at the role that they're applying for, we look at their skill sets, and we try to apply for roles that they are have the highest match. So we're not applying to 5 similar roles at one company. We're trying to apply to 1 or 2 roles at a particular company, because you don't want to saturate the firm or the market with your name out there. Because if your name is out there 100 times and the 101 time is the, you know, the dream job that you're going for, they might not take you seriously because they saw your name 100 times out there and you were applying for 100 different roles.
Right.
Again, strategic ways to think about how you market yourself. So again, going back to the original question, it took me many years to have it come into fruition. But for the average person, I think, you know, 6 months to a year to think about your idea, think about the public need for it, and then look at the competitors. I think once you're able to look at the competitors and look at your the benchmark that you're up against, that kind of gives you an idea whether it's something you want to pursue or not.
Yeah, guys. And so understanding current position, right? Where are you? What else or who else is occupying this space? How quickly can we get the market? How well can we perform the service? Or how good can we produce the good? What's the quality of the good that we're making? The cost of time, the cost of resource, the cost of effort that goes into it. And that's just starting up. And so this podcast is designed to help people understand the actual behind the scenes mechanisms it takes to get your business, your idea from start to sustainability, to scale. And then what a lot of people don't talk about, to sell, you know, cause we want to exit. We want to get out of this business because it's become so well ran. It's become a beacon of what it means to be good business in the industry that we chose, that somebody else wants to buy in as an investor or completely buy us out because they want to take the business over. Maybe it's a larger competitor that's like, hey, you know, you guys have done a great job, but we'll take you from here and we'll swallow it up. So start sale. Mike, thank you so much. This session has been dope. You guys know where to check us out on Instagram at CGM Philly, on Facebook, same thing, CGM Philly, TikTok, CGM Philly. You can email us at info@cgmphilly.com. You can visit our website, cgmphilly.com. More episodes to come. Mike, you've been awesome. Any parting words for our listeners?
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, Dom. And definitely appreciate the opportunity to use this as a platform to share our, you know, trials and tribulations, you know, the do's and don'ts, and just the insight that we have, where we can share with the audience and kind of make their path to, you know, starting their own business, or, you know, even if it's just an idea, help them along their journey. I think it's key, and just basically learning off of our experience so they don't have to make the same mistakes that we did. I think it's key. So thanks to everyone.
Thank you, guys. Next time, we're going to be talking about business plans. Dun, dun, dun. I think me and Mike are going to probably go like devil's advocate on this one. Business plan versus business model canvas. But we'll see you guys next time on CGM Lounge. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Enjoy your week. Happy Halloween. And looking forward to jumping into November with some new topics. Thanks again, guys.